Hi, everyone. Welcome to Try Catch, a podcast sponsored by EI2. We're diving into a new series called Innovation in the Wild, A Day in the Life. For this series, we dive into the real stories behind creativity and problem solving across our organization. Not the polished slide deck version, but the everyday moments where ideas spark, challenges push us to think differently, and unexpected inspiration shows up right when we need it. Each episode, we'll sit down with someone across the FCSA, Frontier, and Ag Country Associations who's living innovation firsthand. You'll hear about clever fixes, tech trends that turned into aha moments, and ideas that sounded a little out there until they turned out to be brilliant. Whether you're here for inspiration, curiosity, or just a great story, you're in the right place. Let's jump into today's episode and see what innovation looks like in the wild. So we're joined today by Shane Fitch. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Gabby.
How's it going?
It's going well.
It's going well. All right. Go ahead and introduce yourself for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm Shane Fitch. I am an AI engineer here at the associations. Been on the job since April of 25. And before that, I was in the app dev space for the past 10 years as a developer and a lead developer on a handful of teams, quite a few teams, actually. In that time, I've been able to work on a plethora of different applications, different innovative kind of pursuits that we've done, creating new frameworks, just all kinds of things that have broadened my capabilities and experience.
Nice.
Now I'm an AI engineer.
Nice. So AI is quite the buzzword in corporate America right now. So what made you choose to jump into the AI space?
Yeah, so everybody probably knows of this concept of like the ChatGPT moment, right? Where people started seeing this transformer model, this AI model behave and act and speak essentially through type text, of course, but like a human. And it was something where you could carry on a conversation. It talked back to you like a person would talk back to you. And by today's standards, if we went back to that version and started talking to it, it would probably seem very primitive. But that really sparked a thought in my mind, a passion in my mind to really start to understand how this technology works, how it can be applied to your everyday life or to a business need. Mm-hmm. And so then I started spending a lot of my personal time learning, researching, studying, experimenting with the with not only the things like ChatGPT, but at the same time, Meta, fortunately or unfortunately for Meta, I guess, had a leak. And one of the AI models that they were working on went into the public domain through a leak. Mm-hmm. And Mark Zuckerberg at the time embraced it. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of kicked off this whole open source community of model builders and companies that are putting out models that you can use offline. So kind of democratizing AI. As I started to look into that more and study it more, I started investing in the hardware and software I would need to play with these models, learn mm-hmm. about them, experiment with them. I built out an AI server at home with a bunch of GPUs in it just to try out some of these models, learn, experiment.
Nice.
And grow in that area. And also with the major model providers, so consuming their services, seeing what those things can do, staying up to date on everything that's coming out from those companies.
Yep.
So that really started my passion down that rabbit hole, I guess you could say. Uh-huh. And I did that, for ever since I can remember, the first minute that came out, I was really just spending a ton of time.
Diving in. Yep.
And then when this role came available, it was something I was super passionate about.
Yep.
I'd shown that passion in, one of the projects that we did as I was a lead developer before this role. As the lead dev group, we would do like pilot programs sometimes, or we would build frameworks and things that we could then disseminate to the developer group to hopefully help make things easier for them. And one of the ideas that came up was GitHub Copilot. And GitHub Copilot is an AI platform that runs in the development environments and provides a ton of utility for developers and helping accelerate how quickly they can build, test, debug, and get code out the door. And so I volunteered to help with that effort, and we did a pilot program, and it went, went really well. Mm-hmm. We got licenses issued. I think that rollout went pretty well. We still have some folks, it's been a slow kind of burn. Mm-hmm. Early on, that platform was useful, but not as useful as it is today. But it's been a slow burn, and I've seen that increase. So anyway, the point is, that also kind of pushed me towards, I want to do this.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be identifying, experimenting, exploring, and trying to find these technologies that we can bring into our organization and help our employees or our customers or whoever, wherever we find opportunities to build efficiencies.
Yeah.
So when the role came up, I pursued it really hard and obviously got it. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I've, why my passion has been there, why I started going on this path.
That's great. So you mentioned the GitHub Copilot kind of innovative solution. How do you think it changed things for developers at our organization?
So I think what it really did is just it essentially gave every single developer a pair programmer or almost like a personal assistant developer, especially as we've had it for about a year deployed within our environment. And in that time, its capabilities have grown drastically in what it can do and how it does it.
Yeah.
At first, it was more of kind of an assistant. You could ask it questions. It can do simple edits to your files that you had open.
Yep.
You might have to tell it which files you want it to edit. It used older models like GPT-3.5 or GPT-4 and 4.0. All the way up till today, it now can run in agent mode, which gives the AI autonomy with a bunch of tools that it can choose to use.
Wow.
So for example, the agent mode tool can run functions to search your code base and look for things in your application. It can make edits to any of the files you want. It can run command line prompts in the command prompt. It can do a lot more things than it ever could.
Yeah.
And so that platform has really unlocked a ton of efficiency by giving everyone essentially a personal assistant, a personal development pair that you can assign tasks to and really guide that development process. I think it's really an evolution.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar in my mind to every time a new framework came out or a new language came out or something like that. So if you think back on programming, you started out with machine programming directly.
Yep.
You're writing assembly code or whatever, punch cards if you're that far back. And that, that works, but then as you advance, you're building levels and layers of abstraction on top of those. And the reason for that is to encapsulate that functionality and say, okay, well, what are these functions that are fairly standard that we want to be able to reuse?
Yep.
How can we expose them as reusable? And then on top of that, you're building new frameworks or you're building new languages and new compilers and all of those things. And so every time that's happened in programming history, it unlocks new levels of efficiency, right? And so as developers, you move forward with those new levels of efficiency. So you may have been a COBOL programmer in the past and then C++ came out and you might have switched over to that.
Yep.
That unlocked new efficiencies. Gave you the ability to be much more productive or make richer applications that ran faster or whatever.
Yep.
When I look at something like GitHub Copilot and AI and how it applies to programming today, it's a similar idea in my mind. It's another abstraction layer. And whereas before we wrote code in a somewhat human readable format,
right?
If you go look at our .NET C# code, yeah, it's still very structured and it's human readable, but that's not what gets used. It gets compiled down to machine code and that's what actually gets used by the computer. And now with AI, we have another abstraction layer. So it's really reduced not only the barrier to entry to being able to write code and get something to run on a machine by allowing humans to just talk to it essentially and it being able to translate that. but it's also unlocked greater efficiency. So those who have been in development or understand development can leverage that tool
and
to get
up.
Things done way quicker,
yep,
way better, you know, than they did in the past. But there are obviously always caveats, of course, if you just, you know, blindly go in and,
right,
and you're not paying attention and you're
don't
not
have
watching
an understanding.
What it does. Yep.
Yep.
You don't know how it works. Yeah, you can get yourself in trouble. But
yep,
just like with any of the other languages and abstractions that have been built over the years, you got to learn how to use them correctly.
Yep.
Yeah, the AI might produce some bad code, but so can a human.
Right.
Right, if you don't know what you're doing.
Yep.
And it's still on us to know those things.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you keep up with kind of the tech trends in your area? Like, what are some practical things that you do?
A lot of research. I spend a lot of time reading, getting notifications from the different platforms that we use. A lot of times experimenting and exploring.
Mm-hmm.
The most difficult thing about AI right now is that it's changing so quickly and rapidly that it's very difficult to keep up with sometimes.
Right.
And so you have to kind of narrow your focus mm-hmm. on the things that, you know, that really apply to you. So for example, right now, a lot of my focus has been on, you know, what the Azure AI Foundry platform for mm-hmm. us, because that's what's relevant to our org.
Yep.
Or Microsoft Copilot, and very soon the Snowflake Cortex AI.
Yep.
So really focusing on those things, because it's just, you got to have a focus, especially with AI. Otherwise, it's just overwhelming.
That's
and you'll
great.
Never. I mean, it's funny because I'll have people come to me with articles and things, and it's like, this is cool. I would have never
so cool.
found this on my own, or
yep.
I may not have, because I wouldn't have been looking for it. But it's just highlights that there is so much out there that it's difficult to keep up on. So I would say, you know, if you're interested in something within AI, you got to target mm-hmm. something that you're interested in. Let's say you like generating videos, right? And you're going to target the different video generation platforms, Sora 2 or VO 3, or I don't know, there's a handful of Chinese ones that are pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep an eye on what those do. Image generation or work, you know, looking at the different productivity type AIs. Just figure out what it is that you're interested in with an AI. Because there's already a wide field of different disciplines.
Right.
And focus on that.
Yeah. This has been part one of our interview with Shane Fitch. Tune in next time for part two.